Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We move it, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Minnesota basketball fans, the Living in Loserville podcast returns. And, of course, our focus with the Living in Loserville podcast concentrates on the Minnesota Timberwolves and Minnesota Gophers. And, you know, it was a 500 week, right? Both teams were 500. The Timberwolves were 2-2. And the Gophers were, that's who I meant, I thought I was saying, I guess, 1-1. Now, you come off feeling better about the Gophers because of the competition, right? Getting that big win against Iowa last night, playing Michigan all the way to the wire. See, you feel a little better. Not that you feel horrible about the 2-2 stretch. Now, we knew those four games could say a lot, and losing back-to-back games against Utah, that's not great. However, the injuries have been piling up, so you have to take that into consideration at the very least. So anyway, thanks for joining us on the Living in Loserville podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron, will be joining us very, very shortly. And you know, like I said, we cover the Timberwolves and the Gophers. We generally start with the Timberwolves, then we go to Gophers. You know, we kind of talk themes from the last week. There was four games for the Timberwolves, so we got a lot to discuss. The two wins, unfortunately, because they're a while ago, we're not going to sit there and break those games down quarter by quarter by any stretch, but we will talk about them, you know. We will talk about them. We got the blowout win over Phoenix, beat the Lakers, and then, you know, a good chunk of actual game, maybe not quarter by quarter, but, you know, game talk will be centered around those last two games. But, yeah, we talk topics. We talk some game, actual game stuff, and just themes that we picked up. One of the themes is injuries. Injuries are really starting to pile up, especially at point guard for the Timberwolves. Cat is still in fuego, right? He's still on fire. However, you know, week by week, we do this damn podcast. Every week or, you know, one or two games in a week time, I can point to a specific moment in a game that hurt his team with the foul issues. Our bench minutes have been really interesting, to say the least. Not in a negative way. I mean, Bayless has given us a lot of meaningful minutes. We'll also preview the upcoming games. And then a big question here. We talked about we're going to get a better view. Last week we talked about we'll have a better view after this four-game stretch. We're 2-2, back-to-back losses against a playoff team in Utah. Where do we stand? You know, is it too early to talk trades and just, or not talk trades, but actually go into trade mode, sell off in a sense? Is it too early or, you know, should we go right into it? That would be a question. As far as the Gophers, you know, a variety of stuff, that Michigan game coming down to the wire, Iowa got that big, big win. And then, you know, so we'll recap some of that. We'll review some of that. We'll talk a little bit about Eric Curry in the starting lineup, get more minutes. We'll talk about Gabe, the freshman. Has he gotten over the freshman wall, started out really good, had some games where you're like, dude, you are a three-point specialist, right? And then now it's, you know, he's coming through, and not just with threes, by the way. And then we're going to preview, of course, the upcoming game, what is that, Wednesday night against Illinois, which is not just a must-win, but has to be a revenge game. And then at Purdue, and Purdue is on the up-and-up ever since the start of conference play. So there's a variety of things to get to, no doubt about it, here on the Living in Loserville podcast. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, as you probably found out, it streams right here live on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitupradio. You can also listen to it live on your phone, 646-381-4990. That's 646-381-4990. So it streams live, archives. It's basically the headquarters right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitupradio. And ropeitupradio is basketball, football, and boxing. Started out boxing, then it went to football and basketball. So just so you guys know when it comes to that. And you can find the ropeitupradio podcast to listen to the Living in Loserville podcast all over the place, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker. A lot of people like Spreaker's app. TuneIn, we've had a lot of listens over the years from TuneIn. You can also, I believe, with the TuneIn app, you can get into Spotify. And Player FM is another great source. A lot of people rave about the setup on Player FM. So you can get us in a whole lot of different places. The Living Loserville podcast is under the Rope It Up Radio podcast. Find us, subscribe, check it out. We're also a part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, okay? And that can be found everywhere, including thegruelingtruth.net. You don't even have to subscribe anywhere if you don't want to. You can head right over there to thegruelingtruth.net. But the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, subscribe to it everywhere, iTunes, anywhere, really. They also stream, and you can subscribe on iHeartRadio and on Spotify. So the Living in Loserville podcast can be obtained and listened to on iHeartRadio and Spotify to go along with a variety of other places to find the show. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. You can listen to the podcast, like I mentioned, or other podcasts. You can, you know, read articles. I actually do a weekly college basketball picks. I do boxing and football for them late as well. And while you're at it, you can place a bet. It'll link it right to mybookie.ag. That's mybookie.ag. And, you know, a lot of people are cutting the cord, the cable cord, right? We grew up, for those who had cable, some of us had a lot, had cable, then didn't, kind of on and off with the different specials. You know, so many people are just getting sick of it. Whether it's just right on their smart TV with Amazon and Netflix, they just don't, you know, they're cutting the cord. And if you're one of those and you're an AT&T customer, I got news for you, okay? I've been an AT&T customer for a long-ass time. This is no just ad I'm coming up with, okay? I've been there forever. And right now, you know, I did DirecTV satellite for well over a decade. Loved it. But the price got so much with HBO and with Showtime and the extras. It's like, dude, I'm over $200 for this. And it's not like I don't have $200, but you know you're getting ripped off. Well, right now, if you've already cut your cord, here's something to take a look at. DirecTV Now, that's the streaming service, okay? So you can, you know, I've been hooked up to it since September, and the technology, as we know, with the streaming services are just improving over and over. I think it's up to 20, maybe, no, I think it's up to 30 minutes of DVR, so you have that option. Obviously, they have a bunch of stuff on demand as well, but the packages and the price is where it's at. As this technology improves, the stream quality will improve even more, but it's pretty damn good. You can get, you know, a package that starts at $40, $55, $65, $75, and you can add on the Showtime, the HBO, the Stars, whatever. You know, you can do that. And you know, all you need is an Apple TV or a Roku. Part of the deal you get with AT&T. If you're an AT&T customer, you get a deal through DirecTV right now. Signs you up for 2 years at a fixed rate. And even when the prices go up, because, you know, inflation, inflation hits everybody except our wages, right? We don't get our inflation with our wages. But I'm telling you, it's a good deal. And check it out. You can still, it's right there on the – I do Roku. So you get a free Roku out of the deal. And, you can either do a standing alone streaming service for HBO or do a part of the package with Direct. You're looking to stream and you're looking for just inexpensive, prices, because these cable prices, satellite prices are just getting ridiculous. I have found that it's pretty damn good right now technology-wise, and it's only getting better, even since, 6 months I've had it. So there's that. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host now that I'm done rambling and see how he's doing here on this fine but brisk evening here up in Minnesota. It started at 10 today. It's down to 3. It's going to get cold these next couple of days, Aaron. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, not much, man. Winter's definitely hit the last couple of days, so we're kind of in hibernation mode around here. Temperatures dropped, like you said, pretty far, and they're going to get worse. Wednesday's supposed to be just terrible, but it looks like the Timberwolves and the Gophers kind of stayed even Steven for the week. Got some good wins over a ranked team for the Gophers, and the Timberwolves kind of beat everybody but the Jazz, so tough loss to Michigan for the Gophers, but that's about it, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man, this is just classic Minnesota weather. It's 3 degrees right now. It's supposed to drop pretty low tonight. It's a high of -5 tomorrow, and that's a high. And it has the little wind gust thing on your screen of your phone. So really, I'm seeing like -10 at noon, and then it only goes down from there. But here's the crazy part. Negative temperatures in Minnesota, in Minneapolis even, not even up north where we could go where it'd be real crazy. It's not that crazy, right? But then you look on Wednesday, like you said, a high, mind you, of -13. So the best case scenario is -13. And the worst case scenario is -29. But here's the kicker. So we got this snow finally. I never thought I'd be sitting there asking for snow. Like, come on, give us the snow in January and February so we don't get it during March Madness and in April with a big blizzard. That's what gets me. If it's going to be cold, it's December, it's January, February, let's snow, okay? I can see some quick little stuff, a blizzard or a storm in March, and then it goes away because it's 73 days later. But this shit's crazy. So a high of 13, -13. Right, it says low of 29, -29, and then on Wednesday a high of 13, like I said, but then by Saturday, a handful of days later, it's a high of 39 and a low of 30. So how do you go from -30 low to high -13 all the way up to maybe 40 on Saturday? I mean, that's just a classic case of Minnesota. Hey, you want the weather to change? You just wait a couple of days and you'll have a brand new outlook at life. It's just kind of funky. But I'm a big let's snow when it's the snow months. Do you know what I'm saying? Because that last August, that blizzard we got mid-April, that sucked, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm with you on that. I like it. Get rid of it in January and February, particularly February. That's my worst favorite month of the year. Thank God it's the shortest. And then work toward March and keep going through the spring. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like we see the end of it now until right around mid-May, which kind of drags on a little long, and then you have those blizzards in April come and go. But, yeah, I mean, it's what we do. It's what we signed up for. We live here, and we get through it.
Yeah, it is true, man. It is very true. We did sign up. We're here, so you could leave at any time. So I guess we can't complain too much. It just cracks you up to see a high of -13, and then 3 days later, it's a high of 40 almost. Like, what the hell? But just getting to some Timberwolves. We'll start with the Timberwolves. Then we'll go Golden Gophers. Like I said, you feel better about the Gophers week, no doubt about it, because they got a ranked victory, right, on Iowa, which was key. and just the way they played at Michigan. So we'll get to them in a second. But the the Timberwolves went 2-2 in the last four games since we last talked. We talked about how this four-game stretch is going to be big, and we need to beat the teams that we're supposed to, and then try to split. So, you know, obviously a 3-1 out of these last four games with one win over Utah sure would have been nice. Going back to that Phoenix game real quick, you know, it seemed like the intensity was up from the jump. Good start from the Timberwolves. We haven't seen that lately. We've been bad, especially against bad teams. We've been battling back. I mean, we had just talked the Sunday before from the Sunday game, Phoenix, we just barely won that damn game, especially the way we started. But it got real chippy early, and that led to a whole lot of chippiness. Ultimately, it led to Dieng and Booker getting tossed for an elbow that, you know, happened to land on the young, pretty boy Booker. And Booker wasn't having it, so he sideswiped his way to a technical. But no, in that game, you know, even probably with Ayton, their number one pick, who wasn't in there, but in that game, you just realize that there's nobody there to guard Cat. And when that's the case, it's a pretty good deal for the Timberwolves. He had 20, 11, and 5 assists at half. Okogie, I thought, had his best overall game when you include the points and the shooting. He was 4-7 from threes. Bayless, at that time, it was a Bayless sighting. He hit 4 threes as well, had 7 assists off the bench. We'll definitely talk about him. Wiggins, oh my God, had 9 rebounds. They ended up getting, you know, a sizable lead in the third quarter, just never looked back. 15 threes and 23 assists, and that was only the 23 assists. They had 15 on the game, but the 23 assists was through three quarters. So I liked what I saw there after having a grind out, you know, much closer than it should have game against the Suns. We blew them out. We blew them out. Now, the Lakers game was an even game through the first quarter. It was like 37-31. I remember writing a little note, and back-to-back threes tied it up. It was 61-58 at half, Lakers up. And then, you know, we made a nice little, you know, little run to it. It took a little while to get going. Bayless again off the bench, 16-8, dude. And he's been starting too, obviously. Rose wasn't able to play in that second half because of that ankle soreness. And you figured that he'd probably be out the next night because it was a back-to-back or whatever. And Okogie went 0-7 for 3. So coming off his best shooting night, not so much. And because we have Tyus, Rose, and Teague out at point guard, here we thought we had all this depth at point guard, Aaron. And sure enough, now all of a sudden we don't, although we kind of do. But we had Wiggins running the point in the fourth quarter. You know what? He did pretty damn good. I think it was 81-76 with 2 minutes left, and then they ran away with an easy victory. We'll get into that road game with Utah in the home game last night. But what'd you think about the two games? You know, the must win, got to beat the teams that you're clearly better than. And, you know, at least we got the job done. But when Rose went out, I thought, oh, my God, dude, Tyus out. Rose, like, the point guard position right now, I mean, thank God for Bayless, because we can't survive having Wiggins closing too many more fourth quarters at point guard, obviously.
Yeah, it is a little rough at the point guard position with all three of them down. And then we got the throw-in Bayless that came in the Philly trade for Butler, who's coming in and playing good minutes. And he's playing actually pretty well. He had a 16-8-2 against the Lakers. And that's a pretty good showing went on. And the next couple of nights against the Jazz also had pretty good nights. I think you hit the nail on the head with the chippiness started kind of with the Suns. And it's good to see. I'm glad that it's there. I've been kind of waiting to see something like that kind of carried forward to the Lakers, although that was a much sort of a paced out, easier game. And then, you know, when we got into the Jazz is when we started to see a little bit of the competitiveness that I've been really waiting to see from this team. So I thought the Suns' victory was needed. We needed to come back and beat that team, show that we could, so and get ahead in that series. And then the Lakers, I thought we'd come out and play well there. Now, I didn't know they were as injury-riddled as they are, as we talked last week. But it's good to see that they can come out and beat teams that they're supposed to beat. Now, moving for the Jazz, you know, that first game will be interesting to talk about. A lot went down in that game.
Yeah, I agree. I had my mute on for some reason. Yeah, that's a good call. And why? You know, Cat played 6 minutes in the first half. He had three falls. Jazz kind of got out to an early lead, 16 to 10 or something like that. And, you know, they finished up the quarter very strong as well. Usually good teams every quarter or three out of the four quarters. You try to, you know, close strong in those quarters, the last 2-3 minutes. So they were up something like 31 to 24. And then the Timberwolves trailed by as much as 13 points in the second quarter. Now, they managed to cut it to 52 to 45 at half. But then, so here's a guy in Cat, and I'm really starting to love Cat in a lot of ways because of his all-purpose game. But it's been three, I think this is the third, is this the third podcast we've done on Living in Lucifer or the fourth? Third or fourth, one of the two. And we said it every game, and this, it's just getting, it's getting silly, dude. So you played 6 minutes, right, in the first half out of, you know, 24 available, right? And you pick it up right away, right off the bat, tech on Cat. By the way, Gibson got kicked out. There was like three or four technicals in that little stretch because Wiggins, what, I mean, I'll say this, and I've been saying this for a while. At some point, Cat and Wiggins need more respect from these judges, refs. And maybe it's because of the reaction, sometimes overreaction, and we'll talk about that last night. You know, Cat did get a tech off of that, but he was clearly fouled. And it's like, I don't know, man. It's like, dude, here you are, and you have four fouls. It's 6 minutes into the second, and I don't know. I mean, it's one thing to be aggressive. You know, he used to chase all these blocks, and he'd get out of position. Now it seems like he's definitely straightened that out. But it's getting frustrating, man. It's getting really frustrating because we're in a lot of these games, or, you know, like how it played out with this guy still – I mean, in 29 minutes, Cat had 33 points. He had a great game. He had a phenomenal, you know, third, like late third into the fourth. And it was just nice, you know, I think it got to what, 21-point lead? I think a minute and a half later after all that stuff went down with the text and with Cat on the bench and Gibson getting tossed. And that is that, you know, that chippiness we were talking about. But to me, now – you know, they did get a 12-0 run, got it to 90 to 80 with 9:31, and then kind of mini runs were still down like 8 with 4 minutes left. But then Cat, late third, all fourth, was just on attack mode, and he threw it down on Gobert with a left hand. Tolliver, you know, hit a three, and next thing you know, we're down by three. And at that point, it was a 25-9 run so far in the fourth quarter with a 139. It's 101.99. So I really liked what I saw in that game from competitiveness, from wanting it as much as the next team. But it's just so, like, frustrating to see Cat dominate a game that he could have added another 8 to 10 minutes on. And it really affected that game. And you know as well as I know is when you come back from that, when you have to make those runs, it's almost inevitable that the next team is going to make a run. And sure, it didn't happen here per se, but that's what we've seen in these games where he has foul problems. The Friday before was against the Spurs, another game we could have won.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit my points you know, Cat's not a rookie anymore, and I think he's in his third year, possibly his fourth. I think it's his third. And he's not getting calls like other players that are his equal. And the team itself, now, when you lose the way this franchise is lost, I can understand maybe some sort of a holdover in getting calls from the referees, but it just seems to be uncanny the way that, depending on the game, they'll go ahead and hit Towns with three fouls real quick, and just obviously that changes the game. Or it seems like sometimes whoever's hot at the moment all of a sudden has foul trouble, or wherever the mismatch is, all of a sudden you got foul trouble. It just seems uncanny the way that continues to be the case with the Timberwolves. And I don't want to sit and hang your hat on bad officiating, but at some point it needs to be brought up. You know, that game after, what's his name, was kicked out, that's when the intensity sort of started. Gibson, yep. And that's when the intensity started. They started making a run back. And, you know, even in that, there were calls that just kind of really got in the way of any kind of meaningful comeback that could have happened in that game. So it just seemed like maybe it's Utah. You know, maybe Utah is the NBA Wisconsin. I'm not quite sure. But it's just, you know, that was a tough one because, yeah, you're right. The Towns had a little 8-10 more minutes, could have put on maybe 8-10 more points, and we would have come out of that one with a win.
Yeah, and then, you know, down the stretch, Bayless, I like Tolliver, but, you know, down the stretch, that's not necessarily the go-to guys, even though, you know, that's not to take anything away from these guys because they've helped us out in a bind here, no doubt about it. But, you know, we got the stop, and Bayless missed a three, and then Lou took a dumb or at least rush shot with 17 seconds left, and we did, you know, end up being able to have a chance to do something again, but Bayless was just dribbling around, took a very and then passed it off, and Tolliver had to take a very, very difficult shot. So that was kind of the end to that game. But you felt – it's a weird thing. You felt pretty good, though. I still felt pretty good, like, okay, I liked what I saw out of that, and – chunks of what we saw last night, I liked what I saw too, Aaron. But going into last night, you had Covington out, obviously, knee jammy. Still real vague. It's been almost a month. 13 straight games now. Still real vague about his return. Tyus Jones is already up to 6 straight. It just seems like he went out 2-3 games ago, but that would be a lie. Teague gets back for like 3-4 games, he's on the bench. This one was his fourth in a row. And then 10 out of the last 18 for Rose. And so that's Rose with the ankle, Teague with the foot. And to me, it's like it was a little different with Teague because I think it was an ankle. So I kind of started thinking, I wonder if we're trying to trade Teague right now. But yeah, the starters, Bayless, Okogie, Wiggins, Gibson and Towns heading into that game. And, you know, Gibson, two early falls, unfortunately. Utah came out with like 5 minutes up. They were into the game. They were up like 18-7. Gobert and Cat kind of trading dunks, real hard dunks on each other. Okogie, actually, speaking of no calls, it's not just the Wisconsin of Utah, which I like that, by the way. I think that fits really well. With the state and just, you know, when it pertains to basketball, but the state kind of matches up too in some ways anyway. But there was a no call for that elbow on Okogie. And, you know, somehow the Wolves just kind of grinded their way back in shorthanded. And with 2 minutes, you know, into the second quarter, it's 32-28. Now the Jazz push out the lead. I think I made a note, 41-33 at the 6:33 mark and got it all the way up to 49-40 with 3 minutes left in the half. But we made what good teams do. We made a run at the end of the quarter, and we made an 8-2 run. It was 53-50. Bayless and Luol Deng. 7 points off the bench by Luol Deng, which was pretty dope. We're seeing both of those guys, especially Bayless, obviously. Really helping us a whole lot. But, you know, they cut it to 53-50. And you're thinking, okay, dude, here we go. And it was pretty close all the way through the third. I think we finally took the lead 79-78, finally. But only to see, you know, the Jazz kind of go on a spurt. So at the end of the quarter, it's 90-85, and I'm thinking, let's just start the quarter well. But the Jazz got hot from three, and the Wolves never recovered. And they just kind of ran away with the game. Not kind of, they did. But I can't say enough about Bayless. And Wiggins had 35, had a really good game. And when you start to line up Wiggins in December, now January, I'm not saying he's turning the corner. I probably won't ever say that unless he's doing it in the playoffs. But he's put together a very nice stretch in December and January. So we have 2 months now of the season. And his rebounding has been an improvement this year somewhat in stretches, but especially in the last 10 games. I think he's averaging like 7 or 8 under Flip. Or God, sorry, Flip. Rest in peace. Saunders. Ryan Saunders. Maybe I should just say Saunders right away. Coach Saunders, I don't know, but I keep doing that. Even when I'm talking about it to my friends and stuff like that, let alone on the show. But I can't say enough about Bayless, and I'll say this. Did the Teague thing kind of make you scratch your head a little bit like, huh, did he really get that hurt? Because he was just back and playing okay, or at least looking like he was okay. To me, in the back of my head, I thought, are they trying to move him? Now, next year, if he decides to opt in to his player option, a 19 mil, next year I think it'll be a lot easier to move him because then that'd be 19 off the cap. But that's only if he decides to opt in, obviously. But that came to mind. What'd you think about the game? Like I said, Bayless has been huge. And it's getting to the point now, let's say, well, let's just talk about that, and then we'll get into, you know, is it too early for trade talk? Or should we just go all into trade mode? Or maybe it's somewhere in between as we preview the upcoming games on the schedule as well. What'd you think of last night's performance? And, you know, that they started hitting, like, I think it was 4 out of the 5 threes in the first chunk of that fourth quarter, and they just ran away with it. But it's hard to feel really bad about this stretch of games, especially even the two Utah games. Sure, they both lost them, but, you know, we're pretty damn shorthanded. And so I like what I see, although it feels strange because you look at the fourth quarter and they ran away with it.
You know, overall, I think I like what I see as well. I think you're starting to see Saunders, we'll just go with Saunders as well, his impact is starting to come in. They're starting to run the ball a little bit more, starting to get out in transition, not be so tied into their sets, which is nice. I think we got a team that's really, really good at getting out and running the floor. And so it's good to see that Wiggins, and I think that really helps him in his point production. He's fast and he can get outside and get to the bucket on breakaways. So that's always good to have him do that. Cat, like you said, is playing really, really, really well. And he's being consistent. What I want to see out of those two is consistency, particularly with Wiggins. And he's kind of still up and down, but at least he's up and down above 15 points, somewhere, you know, in that 20, sometimes 30 range, which is really nice to see. Where would we be without Bayless? I mean, get as a throw-in in the Jimmy Butler trade. Now he's starting. And, you know, I don't really know what's going on with Teague. I think you brought up a really good point about maybe you were sitting him for a trade because he does seem to be the most likely trade option. I have a couple others written down, but Teague really seems to be the one with value and would garner interest from other teams. So I think that's really the one where we're working as far as that's concerned. I thought you were right about the fourth quarter. I mean, you start hitting threes, and we still don't have anybody on our team that consistently can get on a run like that with threes, like a J.J. Redick or somebody like that, then come in and make threes when you need them and make them in bunches, or at least a couple guys like that are nice to have, and we just still don't have that player. So I thought maybe, you know, if we had that player, we could come out and maybe go 3 for 3 with the Jazz, but no, they just took it and ran and went ahead and won that game. So, you know, I was hoping to come back and have a little revenge against the Jazz for what happened in Utah. But, you know, I thought the intensity was pretty good. And I wasn't too upset, like you said, about losing that game. And, you know, going two and two over a 4-game stretch, you're taking care of the two that you need, maybe a couple tough games with the Jazz, and now we go on and play the Grizzlies and the Nuggets, and I guess we got a home-and-home with the Grizzlies coming up too. So, yeah, I mean, it was all right. What are your thoughts on the Teep trade? I haven't heard a lot of other options. And, you know, I also wrote down maybe Tyus Jones would be a tradable guy, maybe Rose, possibly Gibson. What are your thoughts on that?
I think all three of those that you mentioned are definitely trade options and doable. You know, Gibson's playing some really good ball, and I've mentioned it before that he's actually has somewhat of an outside shot that he's not afraid to take and he'll need to keep taking in the next couple of years if he wants to stay in this league or at least be a productive player. That's the thing, like, playing really well, and that's why I don't want, you know, that's why it's keeping – you know, the young player, Dario, out of the lineup, but it is tough at this point to take him out of the lineup, I think. But, yeah, I think Gibson's on the block. Tyus Jones, yeah, because that team can kind of control his future. He's going to be restricted offseason or, you know, restricted free agent. So you could get him this year, and you could obviously take care of him and sign him long term. Rose is a guy who comes on the super cheap, and you could also not control him, but you could also say, hey, if it goes well, a playoff team, a top caliber playoff team, especially off the bench, got to be looking at him. I mean, the money on him is nothing. I mean, it's in our couch by NBA professional league, you know, terms, money-wise. I mean, he is making close to nothing. And even if he signs a healthy deal, he probably won't be killing it because he realizes he probably won't get a 2- and 3-year, 4-year deal or anything like that if it's for high money. And that Adidas contract's still paying. So that's why he's able to be like, you know, I'm good on money right now. So, but yeah, I think Rose, because instant offense, you know, that's huge. Tyus, not so much. He doesn't have a lot of experience. He's gotten a lot of playing times these last 2 years, but as a point guard, starting point guard, that it could be. I still feel like we're going to want to keep him around, so that's why I think that we're not going to move him, but this would be the time to move him if he's about to be a restricted free agent. All these guys, Gibson, Rose, and Tyus, you know, do you want him just to walk, though, too? So I'm wondering about that. Teague is weird. You know, Teague could really help, like, a team like Houston or somebody that's competing, no doubt about it, for the second and third round, possibly. I'm not going to say a championship because we all know Golden State's pretty much got that locked down. But there's a guy who's, you know, this might happen this year, but he always makes the playoffs. And in that, no name, but yet it was still doing good and still producing a lot of wins in the East a handful of years ago with Atlanta, he would be the name that actually would show up in the playoffs. That was always there. Even when they were first in the East, I think they had 62 wins or something that year. People were still like, yeah, but they don't have a star, dude. They need 2 or 3 guys come playoff, and he'd always be the one shining. So he has a ton of experience. So I could see that now. The 19 the next year, it doesn't hurt you long term. I guess a team can look at it and go, well, if things aren't going good, we could trade them by half year next year. So I think Teague stands out, especially, well, I'd say with depth, right? Especially with our depth with Bayless, Rose, and Tyus, or a combination of any of those four. Yeah, I think those are the players that could be on the move, you know. And what do you think now that we're coming out of this, you know, the battle for 500, the fight for 500. It's like we get within one game and then we drop down. And this week was 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, but it was more like a maybe just 1 step back, 2 half-a-step backs. If you really take the emotion and passion out of being a fan and wanting wins and wanting to get to 500 and then going to that playoffs, we'd managed to get to 500. But here we are, 2 games back under 500. I mean, we're still within range, no doubt about it. So do you just go trade happy and go into complete trade mode? Or do you think it's too early? We should still let it, you know, play out and also you know, Ryan Saunders, if Glenn Taylor wanted to see so bad what his worth was for the second half of the season, that'd be pretty BS if you traded three players, because then you're really not giving him a fair shake, because then we'd have to go into, okay, let's mix and match some lineups and figure it out again. Now, if you only make one trade or two trades instead of three or four, and that's kind of where I think we should be, just to give my take on it, right in the middle. I'm willing to let go of some stuff or let go of a good quality player in Teague to be able to maybe get rid of a Deang, you know, money thing. So it's a combo thing. That'd be nice. But I don't think we should go full trade mode, just sell it off like it's baseball. Not that you can necessarily do that anyway, because the 50% contract match. But I don't know, man. We're still within range. Where do you think that the front offices are thinking right now? Personally, what would you do? Is it a little bit too early? I mean, we still have 10 days. Should we kind of sit tight for 10 days and let this deadline get all the way down to the wire? Or should we say, screw it, let's move? But where are you at on this?
Well, I'm assuming that, you know, since trade deadline's 10 days off, that if something's in the works, it's currently in the works. Now, we've been trying to get back to this 500 thing presently with four guys down, Covington, Jones, Teague, and Rose. So that doesn't help us. We probably would surpass 500 by now, having everybody healthy. Again, that's neither here nor there. I don't know about the trades. I think it's early, but the deadline's in 10 days. So, I mean, how early is early? How late is late? If it were me, and that's what you asked, I would probably try to take a look at the roster. We kind of have a lot of point guards now. I'm not sure. I think what you said about combination of those four, I'd like to keep Jones here if possible. I'd like to keep Gibson here if possible. I know Chicago's got a lot of interest in Rose, but why would they trade for him when they can go ahead and sign him in the offseason? So that's kind of a weird thing. Anybody that will trade for Rose must be wanting to make a push this year. So that could be somebody, or just want to get a hold of him as soon as they can. Preferably maybe the Lakers or someone like that. Like you said, he can come off the bench and do something. I think Teague is the most intriguing one. And I kind of think he was kind of agreed to come here because Butler was coming here. And now that Butler's gone, you know, Teague might not have a problem going somewhere. So, yeah, I mean, and then you brought up the point about Saunders, and you go ahead and trade away everybody, and that's not giving him much of a chance unless you've already decided that he's your coach going forward, which that decision may or may not have already been made. And I kind of think it probably has, and especially if you see a bunch of trades, I'm going to think that he's going to stick as the coach. So a long-winded answer, buy or sell, and, you know, I think you're right. You just do a little bit, maybe one trade, two trades, maybe dump some salary, move some guys around. I know we don't like to think of it, but, you know, Covington and Saric are also probably tradable. If the right deal came along. But let's talk a little bit about what is the right deal. What are we looking for? Obviously, I've pointed out earlier that a shooter would be nice. We've been needing that for a few years now, someone who can drain some threes consistently. Now, we've swung and missed on that a few times in the franchise's history, so I'm a little tentative about just trading for that. I think we need a little bit more in the post, unless Covington can come and do it. But if we move him, then we need to replace that. So I guess – you know, I'm really only happy with the point guards as far as starting NBA point guards in Teague and Jones. And I don't think Jones is a starter. I think he's a second point guard. So if you go ahead and move Teague, then you're left with Rose and Bayless, unless you get something back in that trade, swapping point guards.
Right.
And, you know, maybe someone needs a change of scenery or something like that. So that's a tough question. It'll be interesting to see what they do going forward. But I think that if anything is in the works, it's happening right now, and we probably don't know much about it, but I think we probably got some of the names right. It's just a combination of other names, and I haven't really seen anything about. I know that Gasol and the kid in Memphis,
yes,
maybe, or some other guys,
Conley,
that are out there, but I don't
Gasol
really see that
Conley
fitting. I
what
like both
Conley,
those guys
though. What about Conley? Now that money's stupid. His money, he signed that money 3 years ago when they jumped up the cap 2 years in a row, where they just jumped it up out of nowhere instead of, you know, spreading it out over 5 or 7 years. And I think Luol Deng's part of that, or not Luol, but I'm getting them mixed up now, Gorgui. I think he's part of, that's why his contract's so fatty, because he signed it back then. Couple of questions for you. Conley, big money. What do you think him as a starting point guard, if we could move Teague in something for Conley? Because you're right. Memphis does look like they're trying to say, hey, we want out. Or Gasol, whichever Gasol. You know, at this point, you know, both of them are older. The younger brother's not as older, whereas Paul is on his last leg. What about the Ohio State point guard? How about getting him here for Teague and some other stuff?
I like that. I like that a lot. Because he offers toughness and grit and competitiveness, that's what I want to see. Not that Teague doesn't. I just think it's a different brand coming from Conley. He's willing to throw some elbows and do some other things on the court to help you win basketball games. Now, I know his money's a problem. I think you're a little bit more up to speed on that than I am, so it probably would be others. But Teague for Conley, I'd take that trade. But if you add in, like, Teague and Jones for Conley, I'm not down with that. But Gasol is so-so on him, so-so on Mark. I think he'd help a lot. He could put Towns back to the four, which is what I think Towns is naturally, and give you a force in the middle. I like that. I'm a little worried about him staying for a while, but, you know, it depends on how the contracts work with that. Getting a big man for Towns, I think, would be optimum, and it would really help too. I'm still kind of stuck on these point guards. I like Conley. I think we'll take Conley for Teague if that's up for grabs. I just don't know what the throw-in is to match the money. That's what it all depends on.
And that's what it would be for sure, because he's making some hella money. I really like him. I really do like him, though, as a player, and I think he'd fit well. Now, do you see Tyus next year and the following years being able to be a fit at point guard in the starting lineup ever? Because there is an argument to be made that he's able to feed Towns. He's able to run the offense kind of better than what we've had and not have to worry about scoring. He'd be there to – he's a better defender than he was a couple of years ago, these last 2 years. The team, numbers-wise, analytics-wise, he's like a 5 or 6 to 1 assist to turnover. It seems like we're more efficient with him in there. Maybe we need a pass-first point guard in the coming years to move this offense properly and to get the most out of Towns and especially Mr. Wiggins. What's your thought? Because you said he's a backup. Do you think – because remember last year that was the big battle. It was the big battle. It's still this year to an extent. Is Teague or Tyus? When Tyus gets in there, we're better and this, that, and the third. What do you think about that? Because I think Teague could get up. He's a better scorer. He's just as good as passer probably. As far as assists, whatever, but he dribbles a ton. I don't know if he's the best fit for our team the way it's constructed, having to have Towns and Wiggins being the scorer. I'm talking about Teague here. Whereas could Tyus be a right fit for us in the coming, you know, years and then bring Rose so we have Rose off the bench? Because I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't like Rose in the starting lineup. He just shoots too much. I think he's perfect for off the bench. And also, just to follow up on what you said, I completely agree with the trickle-down effect, the Reaganomics, I guess you could say, where you don't want to go all the way, but you don't want to sit there at the deadline and not make a move, even if it's dumping something, because we're going to have to make decisions. That's another thing. We got to make decisions on all of our point guards beyond Teague, because that's his own decision. But just to kind of, you know, I wanted to kind of wrap up off what you're saying. I do agree kind of in between. I think it's a good call. But do you see Tyus fitting as a point guard? I think my biggest worry would he'd have to knock down those threes, and that's something he hasn't necessarily been able to do on a consistent basis, but he has been coming off the bench. So with a fair shake in the starting lineup next year and the year after, do you ever see him molding into a number one here in this setting with these parts around him?
You know, I'd really like to have a look and see. We haven't really had a chance to see him in a starting lineup consistently. He, to me, deserves the chance to start, and I really like the point you made about, you know, being a pass-first point guard, kind of what Rubio was, and I think that's kind of what Flip had envisioned. And now with Ryan, I think you kind of see an extension of that. Not totally, but you're starting to see that kind of the way the offense works, starting to sort of mold back to that. And you do need the pass-first point guard, or at least somebody who's well aware of the ability to pass and able to make those passes. So I really think I'd like to see Tyus get a chance. Now, in saying that, I think eventually we're going to find out with him that he's kind of in the right spot right now. I'd like to see him get a chance and prove me wrong, because I think it's possible that he could be a starter, but I think he's really kind of that second point guard on a good team. Now, he can hit threes, and he can do a lot of things off the dribble. He's a little small, and defensively he's a little bit challenged. But, you know, I think that given the time, and let's say you didn't have any other options, he could be a serviceable number one, but I think he fits better as that number two. And if you went ahead and moved Teague and didn't bring back another point guard, and you had to go with Rose, Bayless, and Jones, I think out of those three, you'd want Jones to start, maybe Rose come off the bench, and have Bayless come in as a third, sort of the way it is now, minus Teague. So,
right.
Yeah, I want to see Ty get a chance to be a starter, but I think what we're going to find eventually is that he's probably in a good spot, being the number two point guard on a team. You know, that's where something like Conley would come in and really flush that out if you could get him.
Right.
But, you know, Teague to me is, he's a point guard, but he's kind of that tweener. I don't want to say Terrell Brandon, but he's kind of that, he'll shoot more than he probably should, pass less than he probably should, but, you know, still be effective. And I think in this
right.
offense that you pointed out earlier, you kind of want a guy at the point who can hit the shot if it's there for him, but otherwise just looks to get the ball around and get everybody else their shots.
Yeah, because he can get off the dribble with the best of them. I mean, this guy is quick. You know, he's a clutch player in a lot of ways, but yeah, I just don't know if this is the right role for him. I mean, obviously we need veterans and stuff like that around these young guys still, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see it. Obviously we had these four games, had a lot to talk about. We're about to get to the Gophers. So a week from now, we have two games from now, from Wednesday till the next time we do our show, which is next Monday. So two games, that's it. Monday and or Wednesday, Memphis at home, and then Denver Saturday. Now, when you look beyond that, when you look at the next six games, Memphis, Denver, Memphis, Orlando, New Orleans, and the Clippers. Now, the Clippers are starting to come down. Well, they're coming back down to earth from where they started. It's a home game. That's a winnable game. At New Orleans is going to be tough, but they are experiencing some issues in the probably in the locker room to an extent, just off distraction, because today it was reported that, you know, Davis has requested a trade. So that could be a little, you know, iffy. Orlando, Memphis twice. We got it. The next six games, we can go 4-2, man. That would be huge. Of course, that would be, what do you know, right at 500, wouldn't it? But with Memphis and Denver, I look at it like we're going to get some practice time, and we need it. And I really hope we can get one or two of these players back, especially Covington. But in general, light week, so we're not going to preview it down to the wire. But when you look at the next six games, it'll be definitely interesting to see how we turn out. And then, you know, I mean, next Thursday is the trade deadline. So we'll definitely have a lot to talk about, because we'll probably have a lot more rumors out there too. Like you said, it's a little light on the rumors right now. So it is what it is. Anything more on the
Timberwolves? I got a quick question for you.
Go ahead.
Quick question for you. You can take all the time you want, though. What would you be willing to give up for Davis? Let's say they need to move him. They need a trading partner. what would you be willing to give up for Davis?
It'd have to be Towns. That's the only way we get Davis. It'd have to be Towns. That's it. And he's a better overall player in many ways. I mean, the guy can hit threes just like him. He's a better defender. He's bigger. He's 7'2", much thicker. He can dribble the ball better. He's a better all-around player. So it would have to be Towns. And that would be doable because he has his extension already signed. That's what's key about that. Whereas we'd have to make sure that he's willing to sign in trade, if we're going to bring you here, we need you to sign the contract. Because we're not, that would really screw us if that didn't happen. But that's it. That's all that we could put on the table for them, in my opinion, anyway. I don't see them taking Teague and Towns and his extension's silly. Like, it's a 5-year, well over $200 million. So it'd have to be Towns, money-wise and talent for talent, so they could kind of go young or whatever.
Do you think you could give Wig money-wise? I mean, he's moving into that big contract next year.
He's into
obviously
it. He's already
cheating.
Into it. And no, I don't think it could. Not for that. I don't think they'd take that for that as the – you'd have a little spare part in there, like you said before, to match stuff, to be in that 15% range. But, I mean, I would, but I don't think they'd take it. Wiggins – for him, I don't think they'd take that. I think they'd be after Towns since he has his extension already signed too.
Yeah, sure. I was just throwing it out there. Yeah, I don't know if I'd be willing to give up Towns for that, but if he took Wiggins and another part or another couple parts, I'd be willing to do that. I don't know. I think it's just pie in the sky anyway. But I just figured I'd get your opinion on that since he's available.
Yeah.
You know, they could be holding him. It depends on how bad they want to get rid of him, what they'll take for him, but. Yeah, that would be nice. I don't know if he'd be too kind about coming up here to minus 13 degrees, but, maybe with a trade he wouldn't have a choice, but, of course, he'd have to sign that contract. So let's move on to the Gophers. That loss against Michigan, that was rough, man.
Boston has the best deal out there, and the Lakers have some pretty good deals too, but Boston has the best deals. The problem is they can't make the deals to the offseason, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just moving on. Yeah, you're right about that. Everybody's got better deals than us. Gopher basketball, watched the game against Michigan, really had a chance to win that one. Just a bad bounce to the wrong guy at the buzzer, and he goes ahead and sinks the shot, and we lose to Michigan. I thought they played really well, Gophers that is. Murphy at 15, 11, and 1. Coffee was a little bit down, 11 and 5. I thought they played tough, though, for a road game. I thought they played well enough to win on the road at Michigan. And I think that's going to carry them forward. Obviously, they beat Iowa, but, you got to go beat Illinois. You got to go beat Purdue. And I feel like playing well against Michigan on the road is a good springboard to move ahead into those games.
Yeah, we talked about how let's at least show up and be respectful. Or not respectful, let's not be respectful, but respectable. Let's show that on the road, we're not just a walkover on the road like we had been. I mean, quite frankly, we had been garbage. Ohio State, garbage. Illinois, garbage game. That Boston caught, like, we've been getting beat heavy on that. And obviously the Illinois game exploited that. But, I did like how we played. We got off to a great start, still up at half. And then Michigan, really came out rolling, go up like 50-39. To me, it just felt like too many turnovers in general. Like you said, Coffey and Murphy barely scoring in the second half, though. Finally, Murphy kind of closing in on that double-double or whatever. You could see Curry really started hustling out there, getting on the ground, and it's better. It was a 10-point. It was 57-47 with 4 minutes left. And then, we go on a run. And, Murphy had an offensive foul, and he missed a free throw. But we still, like you said, still had it there. And Kelscher, who, by the way, you know, Kelscher's been looking really good. It does seem like he's gotten over that little freshman wall because he looked so good in the early season. That one game he had like four or five threes in the first half, won the game with a really difficult three at Washington, and that's looking like a damn good win right now. They have yet to lose in the Pac-12. Hopefully they win that whole thing. That would be huge. But to tie it up with 24 seconds left, like you said, the rebound and a made bucket. You know, neither team shot really well from the field, especially three. I was disappointed. Washington had been looking good. 5 turnovers in 12 minutes. The bench didn't really give us much, especially the second half. I did like what I saw out of Arturo, I thought, early in that game. But, you know, we're up with a decent lead in the first. And I like the way we battled back. And we made it more than respectable, you know. So I'm good. You know, I'm not good on how the game ended, obviously. Like you said, went to the wrong guy and shit happens and it does suck. And, you know, odds are we weren't going to beat them they weren't going to lose back-to-back games after not losing at all. So I was happy with that. And then I was even happier last night with the Iowa game, obviously. Arturo was out with a minor shoulder injury. Sounds like it's going to be okay, you know, that it's not going to be anything long term. That's another guy we talked about, Eric Kelly, a little bit last week. He got inserted into the lineup and just in general played a lot more minutes. I think that veteran leadership, the defense, he's had his moments where he's played pretty good. He's had his moments offensively where he haven't looked good. I feel like the rust is coming off Curry, and he's just a solid presence, not just defensively, but out there in general. But last night, the points in the paint, you know. We actually got off to, you know, we shot really well except for 2 of 6 from three, but 12 early points in the paint. We were up 24-17, 8 minutes or so into the game. You know, then Iowa made a run like they're gonna. They cut it to like 34-32. It was an up and down pace to that game, though. Really, really fun pace. And I liked how we were able to stay with it, too. And, you know, down the stretch, do what we had to do and really make a great run in the second half. But early, you saw Murphy with 4 assists. Like I said, Gabe had 3. You know, he's finding his 3 range. Coffee kind of sparked us to get a lead under 2 minutes. I think it was 55-46 at a half. And the Gophers shooting 65%, and Iowa was shooting 60, you know. They had 24 points in the paint at half, 17 assists at half, and then you had Washington and Mott's have really nice effort off the bench. By the way, as we know, Jordan Murphy became the second all-time leading rebounder in Big Ten history in that game, which is pretty cool. I'm not sure if he's going to catch the first guy, but hey, that's pretty good. But yeah, I mean, 12 minutes into the second, we're on all cylinders, 70-57, Coffey and Murphy, who's been struggling of late, they played better. This freaking Moss dude for them, though, 5 of 6 from three at that time. Now, he had kind of a bad run at the end of that, but this guy was, you know, just draining threes. With 7 minutes left, you're looking at 76-65, and then the full court press hit. And we were sloppy, we were turning the ball over. And it got him into the game to the point with 3 minutes left. It was 81-73. And then it was 82-78 with 2:15 left. And you're thinking, here we go again. We're not going to lose this game, are we? And the Gophers, after starting, you know, great from the free throw line, missed 4 straight free throws down the stretch. And I thought, here we go, Aaron. We're going to freaking end up losing this game. Now, luckily, Dupree, once again, had the late steal in a game, had an assist to Curry, made it 87-80, and we pulled it out cleanly at the end. There was a moment from about the 7 to 2 minutes I didn't like. A lot of it was that full court press. But other than that, we played damn good, especially offensively, man. We really had it ticking. And like I said, I think Gabe Kolscher, I think he's finding his stroke. And I liked how he's driving and using that 6'4 frame to get closer buckets. You don't always have to shoot threes, but then now he's finding his three range.
Yeah, I mean, that was a heck of a game. I was pulling my hair out come the end of the third, early fourth. As soon as we got up 16 points, I thought, okay, let's go ahead and push ahead and end this thing. And it didn't happen. Went on a drought. They pulled out the press. Fran McCaffrey pulled out everything in his bag of tricks. I think he even sat all his starters starting out the third or maybe at the end of the half. And he's just pulling everything out, getting on the refs and everything. I thought they were going to pull that game out. We couldn't hit free throws when we needed them. And I really thought, you know, coming down the stretch, that shooting 65%, being up 16, we were going to go ahead and lose to Iowa at home. Thank God we pulled it out, got some good fouls. I thought you said that steal by McBrayer was huge. Washington came in with some good minutes, had 7 points in 13 minutes, and he failed to make those turnovers that he made in Michigan, which really cost us. He made some costly turnovers against Michigan. He really thought he played better against Iowa. You know, that game was just kind of a push and pull. We really came out on fire. I thought we really ran the floor well, which is not something that we're used to seeing with the Gophers. They tend to be pretty staid in their offensive sets, but we got out on the break. Coffey had a few good dunks. There were some alley-oops starting to kind of open up a little bit. And when we pulled ahead, I thought that was going to be it, and we could have continued that. I think the referees had a little bit of help with keeping Iowa in there. But, you know, you don't make your free throws, you're going to have problems coming down the stretch in any game. And lengthened that game, he being McCaffrey, really lengthened that game by just doing anything he could. I thought he did a great coaching job, and we just barely got out of there with a win. So, you know, that's what you want right now. The Big Ten's so convoluted right now that – Purdue's coming up. They look really tough. And then you got a loss by Michigan State loss this weekend. So it's just, you know, pulling teeth in this conference right now. And any win's a great win. And, you know, I guess you can have quality losses too, but you got to keep winning and beating whoever you can. And you got to protect your home floor. And I think the Gophers did a good job at doing that against Iowa. And so, you know, we keep moving on from there. Got a rematch with Illinois. That's going to be tricky, but I think at home we'll do okay. Murphy's played really well against Iowa. Coffey played really well. Kelscher hit some big shots. It was good to see him hit some big shots again. And then Washington, I think those were the biggest players in that game. And just, you know, it's going to be tough against Iowa every time, and it just proved to be another tough game against Iowa.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it in a nutshell. And that was a big game in conference because – you know, sitting at 4-4 is what we were going to that game, and I was 5-4. So to be now 5-4, a game over 500, and to knock Iowa down to 5-5, that's pretty big. So here we are sitting at six spots. Yeah, we're in sixth place. Wisconsin 6-3, Maryland 7-3. They've actually, you know, stumbled a tad. Purdue, I mean, they had Edwards and a bunch of spare parts that they hadn't make work. Not to call them spare parts, but new parts or spare parts from the last 2 years of success. So it took Purdue a good chunk of the season so far to figure it out. But boy, have they figured it out. They're 7-2. You got Michigan and Michigan State up top. Technically, Michigan State's still 9-1 and 8-1 there. So we're in good spot right there. There's no doubt about it. When you look at this schedule, it's doable in a strange way. Now, I say that because after this Illinois game, which is bloody revenge, murder, we need to get this like, if you're not motivated for that game, I don't – you know, just there's the door. You know what I mean? Here's your release. Go find a scholarship someplace else. We don't need you because we got embarrassed. I don't care if it's on the road, if it's on the moon, wherever the hell the game is, if it's in Yugoslavia, we got to look better than that. And so if it's a big if, but if we can get the home game at Illinois, odds are they're not going going to shoot the freaking lights out like they did before. It was 6-8 from threes like in the first 10 minutes. So let's get by that. Then it looks like, Chris, what are you talking about? At Purdue, home against Wisconsin, we know they're going to be pissed because we beat them. And then, oh, by the way, at Michigan State and at Nebraska. So you're thinking, yeah, this lineup. So the four-game stretch, no. Obviously, 1-1 this week. The next time we talk to you guys, if we're 1-1 off that, win at Illinois, you know, win home and then go down swinging at least at Purdue, that's fine. We're still one game up. But hear me out on this. You don't want to push it to four because it looks bad, right? It looks like a three-game losing streak coming up. However, if you push it to the next six games, which would bring Indiana into the frame, we're talking mid-February, okay? So if you go a win, we got to beat Illinois, right? So then you have Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State. Now we just need to win one of those games in Nebraska. At Nebraska, though, that's tough, and we already beat them too. And then Indiana at home is more doable than it felt like a month ago because they're on a free-for-all. Now, mid-February, where are they going to be? They could be on a five-game winning streak. So who knows? But when you look at six-game stretch, if we can go 3-3, and this is a long-winded way to get here, but if we can go 3-3, I just had to plead my case, you know? If we can go 3-3 in these six games, that would put us still, you know, one game above 500, and then you're sitting with five games to go. So, you know, these games, this stretch, man, especially the three in a row after Illinois, at Purdue, home Wisconsin, at Michigan State, ouch. But if we can, we basically have to win, we have to beat Indiana and Illinois at home, and then try to steal one to two of those games out of Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Nebraska. And I know we can win one of those. We may be able to win two, but I like our chances to go 3-3 in the next six. Now, that's something we're obviously going to go back on and see and you know, take note. I do like the 1-1 stretch, though. I think we can get 1-1, you know, 1-1 in these next two games.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, and I agree with you on the 3-3 over the six-game stretch, too. I really highlighted a game coming up, the Wisconsin game at home. Now, if you win that, that really helps for your tournament bids. I feel like we've got to win either against Wisconsin, Michigan State, or Purdue. We've got to win one of those games to have a resume built a little bit better for the tournament. I think that the Wisconsin game's the most doable, and I just liked how we matched up with them in the Kohl Center, and I feel like we can do that again at home. So, you know, there's a chance to go 4-2. That's being a little optimistic because I feel like, you know, we're probably going to drop one to either Nebraska or Indiana, and either one of those games, it's okay to drop one to those guys. You've got to beat Illinois, got to play well against Purdue. Now, if you can beat Wisconsin, that means you swept them for the season. That really helps your chances going forward. Michigan State, it'd be
really
nice to beat them, and we usually
too. Not to interrupt you, but we'd have to check that stat. When's the last time we swept Wisconsin?
Yeah, I can't remember at all when that happened. They've been so good lately. And, you know, we've played Michigan State fairly well in the past, so I don't think a win there is unthinkable either. But I think you got to have one win against a quality team in that stretch to really help you in the tournament. It's just so close now in the Big Ten that you've got to have the quality wins and quality losses at that. And, you know, Nebraska's a possible win. Like you said, Indiana, like, you don't know what they're going to be when you see them. So, you know, you can count that as a win. But, you know, get Illinois, get Nebraska, and then go for one of these other teams. Hopefully you can get that win against Indiana. But if you can't, you need to beat either Wisconsin, Michigan State, or Purdue. All of them likely you could do it. It's just you got to come out and play well that night. And, you know, and there's a chance that we could be hitting our stride, too, so we'll have to keep an eye out for that and see. You know, maybe we'll start, you know, kicking out some games here, which would be nice. I think we're a talented enough team. If we get it going, Washington maybe picks it up a little bit. I think we've got a chance to win, you know, more than we think. But then again, we catch some injuries, like Oturu doesn't come back or something like that. We could have a bad six-game stretch. So, but I like your ideas. on the six-game stretch going forward. And I think, you know, going 500 in that stretch isn't going to hurt you. It's not necessarily going to help you, but it's not going to hurt you.
But if you're sitting at one game over 500 in the middle of February with a month to go or 3 weeks to go, that's a good spot to be in, you know, with this treacherous, you know, Big Ten. So, yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on it from a week-to-week basis here on Living in Loserville, the Timberwolves and Gophers podcast. Anything else you'd like to add in before we get the hell on out of here, sir?
Oh, man, it's a good week coming up here for both squads. So, you know, you like to see the Timberwolves play well, and especially the Gophers. I'd like to see them continue winning and at least playing with the same energy that they've been playing with lately. I think that's going to bode well for them.
Let's get out here. Enjoy the games. We'll be back next Monday. Enjoy your week. Try to stay warm, Minnesota people. But just think, Friday and Saturday, you'll be able to get the sun tanning lotion out and get a little race. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival or the bullshit.